Well, one of the guests we haven't introduced yet is Kate Green, and I'm really happy to be able to introduce her to you. She's our guest speaker today, and she's from the Unitarian Service Committee. Most of you know that the Unitarian Service Committee, which we call USC, was founded in 1945 by Lotta Hitch-Manova. Kate has been a program manager for the last 10 years at USC. And over this time, she's worked with her locally based colleagues in South Asia in a variety of combinations, and at this time is the program manager for Nepal. And you'll see some slides later of some of the places she's trekked. In addition, Kate coordinates the outreach across Canada. And you'll notice in the offering basket that comes around, there's an opportunity for you to take an envelope if you want to support USC. The core of Kate's experience is in community-based projects focused on how to grow enough food and maintain sustainable livelihoods. So seeds, water, soil, communities, men, women, youth, children, livestock, flora, fauna, all of those are her projects. All of the USC's work is done via local staff and community groups, so there is a healthy level of training, administration, and management involved for Kate as well. Kate has degrees from Queen's University in Kingston, the University of East Anglia in Britain, and Ryerson University in Toronto. And she's based at that famous 56 Spark Street. Welcome, Kate.
Good morning. Am I clear and loud enough? It's always important for me to check because my voice can get a lot higher. Adjust myself here. There we go. How's that? Still good? Thank you so much for this very warm welcome. It's been a couple of years since I was here, and it's always a delight to see friendly faces of people I've known for a long time and others that I've just met in the last few years, and it's particularly nice to have a board member of ours who lives right here in Saanich around the corner, Robin, here as well. I would especially like to begin this morning with a thank you from several communities in eastern Nepal who were the recipients of the Heal Our World funds that were so generously raised and shared with USC Canada last year. This is in the eastern part of Nepal, an area where the rivers are extremely strong and tied very much to the rainfall, and agricultural practices, many forces have caused erosion, and issues of flooding and insecurity of livelihoods are very serious in eastern Nepal. And so our work in that part of the country is very much based on the riverbanks and the community's livelihoods and agricultural practices and planting of trees and reseeding riverbanks, all of that work. And we had sent a proposal and were accepted by Heal Our World, and a very generous contribution was made by First Victoria, to which I'm glad to say the reports, and when I visited last, I was able to see some of the work again. And an additional 40 hectares of riverbank was added to the 500 that they have under rehabilitation right now and under care by the communities. But aside from the numbers and the statistics and the photography and the various ways we monitor the riverbank work, the most important thing was what Dinesh, my colleague, sent to me in a message, an email, around the middle of October. The rainy season had passed. The heaviest rains in over a decade had occurred. And he said, Kate, no one was flooded out in those valleys this year. The rivers did rise. The rivers were caught, slowed in the newly planted shrubs and in the grasses, and the soil built up amongst those. And what they had been doing in other valleys had happened in the new areas as well. So I wanted to thank you. And Dinesh especially knew I was coming here this weekend, and there was a message on Thursday for me to say thank you and namaste from Parivartan and the communities in Pafarbari and Chatuban in eastern Nepal. If you'd like to know more about that work as well, I'm available after church and also on email to talk about it as well. I came to the title for this presentation this morning from a phrase that I heard many, many times a day on my most recent field trip to Nepal, which was back in September. Saying namaste, namaste happens like breathing in Nepal and in much of South Asia. But in Humla, our high Himalayan program, they add on a phrase in the local language of where are you going? Namaste, where are you going? Namaste, where are you going? Because everyone is going somewhere on the trails. I should describe a little bit about what Humla is like and where it is, and I'm so pleased we were able to show a few pictures later on, but I'll do my best with just plain words. Humla is in the farthest northwestern corner of Nepal, and it is a district that one needs to fly in or walk for about 10 days. The nearest road is 10 days away over fairly high mountain ranges. The airstrip is in the district headquarter town, a very small town of Simikot, and it's at about 10,000 feet above sea level. From Simikot, there are then trails that spread out throughout the district, some leading towards Tibet, others to the east and west, and then down the river valleys to the south and other districts. It's shared about evenly between Hindu Chetri communities and Buddhist Lama communities. And USC began working there over a decade ago when it first became allowed by the government of Nepal for agencies to engage in community work in remote areas. So we've worked in Humla for quite some time. But keeping to the principles that Dr. Hichmanova felt very strongly about of phasing in and phasing out and knowing when to move on, we've been sort of making our way up and down and through the valleys in Humla. So we are working in three new valley regions than we were at the start 10 years ago. And all of this is with my local colleagues, and you'll see pictures of them near the end of the service with people named Anga and Kangri and Pratap, who is the head of our program for the whole of Nepal. And their climate is quite similar to eastern Canada. They have a three-month-long winter. Right now it's about 20 below, between minus 10 and minus 20, and there's a few meters of snow, and everyone is inside, staying warm. The animals are in the lower part of the little homes, and the people are living above, and there are small fireplaces to keep warm, and they are waiting and eating and living through the winter months. And as soon as it is warm again, agriculture begins. We know from the statistical work and the surveys we do and from our colleagues that food security is tenuous in Humla. When it is a good year, things are good, but there are so many factors that can cause more than half the households to have only half the amount of food that they need for the year. It's about 50% food insecurity is how we refer to it. The way that's dealt with is people eat very, very little whenever there is any stress on their ability to grow their crops. And also many people leave. Mostly men leave for a year or 2 years at a time. They walk out of the district to work in other parts of Nepal or in India. And so that's a little bit of the context of Humla. I was there in September to walk around the programs for 8 days, and I was able to reach 6 of the 14 communities that we're involved in right now. On food security work as well, in organic agriculture, in increasing the diversity of varieties of beans and millet and wheat and rice that they're able to grow. And no one has been able to give me a particular reason why, but vegetable growing pretty much disappeared in the last 15, 20 years in Humla. And there'll be whole villages and communities where no one grows any green vegetables. And so the restarting of a more diverse agricultural system and a stronger household food security is a big part of our work in Humla, as well as clean water systems and latrines. And we have rebuilt a school in the last couple of years as well. So it's very diverse work, very human work, based on the needs in the community, but the core is their food system. Every day we would get up and start to walk for 5 or 6 hours, and then pause where there would be some of the work going on, fields where farmers would meet us, and have a meal and then walk again another 3 or 4 hours to reach our nightly destination and to stay there. Have a brief pause to grab some water and cool off a little bit and have a snack, and then there would be community meetings and discussions late into the night. And that was the routine for the whole of my visit. So we were walking all the time. And that's where we would meet people, and they would say, "Namaste, where are you going?" And that's what some of these stories come from. One of the first ones really highlighted how quickly decisions must be made, the knowledge that farmers have, and what risks are out there. That we, as much as we may try to strengthen that system, it is a long, long process. We were walking along and having a pause on a steep hillside, and a woman came to rest near us, and she had a big basket on her back full of millet, which is a grain that looks like a little hand when it's raw. It's like a little claw, but it's all covered in little bits of one of the South Asian millet varieties. But they were still green in her basket. They were not golden, deep brown like ripe millet should be, and it was too early anyway. It was only September. And so Pratap was just talking with her. "So, namaste, where are you going?" "No, the millet, it's green. You know, what's going on?" And she said, "I had to decide. I had to harvest today. There were rats all that had just, you know, increased all over that hillside where her fields were, and were eating everything. And if she didn't pick it green that day, harvest her field, there was going to be nothing. They would have at least the green millet to dry in the sun a bit. It would be edible, but it would not be as healthy as they had hoped. And it also meant she had no seed for next year because it had not reached seed stage." So it had been a hard day for her to make that decision to harvest her fields, knowing it was too early, knowing this wasn't the best day to do it. Fortunately, she was from the community of Raya, where there is an agricultural cooperative that USC and our partner in Humla, which is called SHIP, has helped to form. She's a member of that. They have the beginnings of a community seed bank getting started. She is going to be able to network around and get access to seed without paying cash for it through the community network that's been set up. And she's been part of what they started to call seed education classes that they've been doing each night in the fall for 3 months. And it's not community workers teaching farmers anything about seeds. It's purely been a discussion time with a local facilitator, one of our community workers, just keeping the conversation going and drawing people out. It hasn't been a class about seed saving. It's just been getting them talking together. And she was going to be able to say what was happening on her hillside and share that information quickly and get that around so other people could watch and see if rats were going to be a problem for them. So not optimal, but some safety net was there for her, and we were glad to have spoken with her and learned of those quick decisions that sometimes have to be made. Another great namaste, where are you going, was some absolutely delightful young, sort of teenage young women who were Dalits. They're from the untouchable caste. And this was already an extraordinary thing that we would have met them along the trail, because certainly in my other visits to Humla 10 years ago, the Dalits would not walk the same trail as others. They would lead very, very separate and excluded lives. But these young women came along and they had shawls on, again, on their backs, full of these lovely little red tomatoes, because they were from a community where several of the Dalit households had gotten together with SHIP and were growing tomatoes and cabbages and spinach, and had some little lean-to greenhouses going, just plastic in a wedge off the side of houses to start things earlier. And so they had had quite a good harvest of these tomatoes, and they were walking to Simikot to sell the tomatoes. And they stopped and had a chat with us, and we shared a snack, and there was singing and storytelling got going, and before we knew it, about an hour had passed, and "Where are you going? Namaste, where are you going?" had been the start. They were indeed going to walk for 2 days, just sleeping by the side of the trail with their shawls for the night, and get to Simikot to sell the tomatoes. And Anga asked them, "What will you sell them for in Simikot?" They said, "Oh, 10 rupees a kilo, 10 rupees a kilo. It would be great. And he said, and back at your village, at the crossroads of the trails, what would you sell them for there? 10 rupees a kilo. Yeah, that's what tomatoes are. But they were going to walk for 2 days and walk, stay in Simikot a night probably and walk back. So it was delightful to meet them, and they were so outgoing and talkative. It was very unusual, and we knew they were Dalit women by their dress, and they were telling us things. But they were still so vulnerable, even though they had this great year with the tomatoes. They didn't have the confidence to realize tomatoes go for 60 rupees a kilo in Simikot. And so before we finished our visit with them, they were actually going to stop at the ship office where Anga, our colleague Santosh, was there and talk with them, and he was going to make sure they got a little support to sell really well at the weekly market in Simikot and get 60 rupees a kilo instead of only 10. That's the sort of very kind extra things that we saw happening the whole time we were traveling over these hills. A third one was a woman came along with a little baby, again on the back, everybody's carrying something. She said she was about 4 months old and very tiny. She did not have a name yet, which is also very common and somewhat indicative of health issues in Humla. But she was a sweet little bobbly head looking over the mom's shoulder at me. And they were heading up to the high pasture where the cattle and the goats and some of the yaks were going to be for the end of this fall season to graze in the very, very high pastures, and you'll see them in the pictures. And she appeared to have no luggage with her. She was only carrying her child. She was going to be there for a week checking in on the animals. There was probably a small hut or a shelter of some kind. But we thought, oh, this is a hard week to climb another couple thousand feet above and stay with the animals and take her turn. But as Anga pointed out, it was also going to be a rest for her from a home life that was undoubtedly extremely busy physically, very laborious, harvest beginning to happen, and all of that. And I think of that woman, and I do have a picture of her. Her name was Lakshmi and her little baby, that now they are back home in their little village home in Karpalgaon was their village, where I did know from Anga that they have one of the improved cook stoves that SHIP has helped to design and install many hundreds in Humla, which are a metal box stove to replace the open fireplace so that less wood is needed. It stays warmer longer. It's very radiant. They can keep hot water, and especially in the winter, are essential to people's health, where they literally stay inside all day long for weeks at a time. And in a smoky, open environment, everyone, especially young children, have a very hard time. So I know she is back from the high pastures and hopefully warm in her home in Karpalgaon. A last feature of this Namaste, Where Are You Going? I'd really like to highlight the incredible commitment that is made by our colleagues in these situations, especially up in Humla. And almost all of them are Humli staff. They are from that place. A few have come from other parts of Nepal to work with us. But we have to adjust to their pace and respect that so much. When I visited Humla previously, the only way to get a message anywhere was for someone to walk and take the message. And so it would take a week to organize a meeting. And they would often say, under the full moon, we'll meet in this place. And Kangri or Jiril would start walking and assemble the farmers or in a community. It took a week to have a meeting, to organize a training, or to find out if something was ready, if they were ready for the pipe to arrive for a water system, or if the stoves had arrived by airplane in Simikot and were ready to be carried to the communities. Today, they do have mobile phone coverage because satellites are straight up. And when you see the steep hillsides, that's the only way they can communicate. And I'm actually able to exchange emails with Simikot, with Anga, and get the financial reports and the ongoing monitoring work done. But they do have mobile phones now and are able to telephone and find out and not spend a week walking to find out if something is ready to happen. And when that pace is so remarkably different from the speed at which we tend to work and live here in North America, that I am very thankful for those long walks to slow me down to adjust to the sometimes very difficult conversations, like a family that will not have seed, but also very positive ones of where communities are working with what they've got, with support and incredible commitment from our colleagues, to be able to grow more food exactly where they are. And that is very much what USC is about in all of the programs where we work. This year, it did turn out to be a fairly good harvest. There was not a frost that came too early or a hailstorm. That's their biggest fear, is a frost in October, and there wasn't one. So it was a good year in Humla last year, and now they are waiting for the new year to begin. So Namaste, Where Are We Going? Also includes a little bit about USC. And these are the themes of our work, whether it's in Latin America or Asia or East or West Africa. But as I was out at an event on Salt Spring yesterday at CD Saturday, and as we are asked in many places, well, you should do this work in Canada. You should be involved in Canada. And for many years, we've been in solidarity. We've connected. We've supported organic food movements here, seed issues. But officially and in the ground and with people, we do officially have Canadian work now. It was briefly announced in the newsletter, if any of you received that, and I brought copies here, that we do have a program funded by a private foundation to work with the organic seed community here in Canada. And it's very much with them and has come from, you guys know how to organize this. We're ready to do it. Could you coordinate, manage, help to lead an organic seed security initiative for Canada? And that began in November last year and is well underway. And there's much activity here in British Columbia, in the prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Maritimes. And we have new staff and officially a Canadian on-the-ground program, which is indeed very exciting, 66 years after we were founded. I'd be very happy to talk with anybody about that, and there'll be more information coming about the new seed initiative in Canada. Thank you very much for such a warm welcome today again, and I look forward to speaking with any of you, and thank you for your generosity in spirit and in support for so many years to USC. I hope you'll enjoy the pictures here at the end. About 2 days after I returned from my time in Humla, a friend of mine who is a poet in the United States sent this poem, completely unrelated, and I asked if I could set it to pictures and perhaps use it, and he absolutely said yes. So I hope you will enjoy seeing some of the places and the people. Thank you.